D-E-A-T-H. And I said, you mean death? I said, yeah, we talked to Zachary about death. I mean, not, we don't show him books of death. That's dead. No. No. We had to talk to him about death from a very young age when he asked me, where are Grandma and Grandpa? My parents. And I could give him some line, oh, they live in Kansas, and they just don't want to see you. No, come on. I said, they died. They are with Jesus in heaven. And I remember at that time he said, okay. And one day we're going to go there too, right? Yeah. And we'll see them. I'm not afraid of that. I'm not afraid of talking to my children about things that die. Things die. Because unfortunately, we all have to face it, and it's awful, and we all have to face it, and it's awful. And we all have to face it, and it is awful. But it changes us. Let's look here. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 1. He says, a good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death is better than the day of birth. It is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart. Frustration is better than laughter, because a sad face is good for the heart. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. It is better to heed the rebuke of a wise person than to listen to the song of fools. Like the crackling of thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of fools. This too is meaningless. This is fascinating to me. It's fascinating to me how much Kohelet celebrates death. He's trying to tell you in about four or five different phrases, death is better than birth, mourning is better than laughter, sadness is better than joy. Now, let me ask you something, folks. Is sadness better than joy? Think about the last time you were really, really, really sad. And think about the last time you were really, really, really joyful. Which one would you like more? That's a no-brainer. He is speaking almost ridiculous statements. He's expecting, in my opinion, the reader to be smart enough to identify the hyperbole in his statements. Hyperbole, not this, that's a hyperbola. It's hyperbole, which is exaggeration. He's expecting the reader to identify that he's speaking exaggeratively. He's speaking over the top. Listen to these words again. He says, a good name is better than fine perfume. All right, so he starts with this comparison. He says, a good name, a good reputation, an above board, people who respect you because you are respectable, that's even better than just fine perfume. Fine perfume makes you smell good. A good name indicates that people think you are good because you are living rightly. You are watching out for your reputation. So he starts with this comparison. Everybody knows, a good name is better than just smelling good. It's important to be genuine with integrity, living a life of integrity and honesty, than just smelling good. Okay, that's what he starts with that. He says, in the same way as that is just so obvious that a good name is better than smelling good, he says, the day of death is better than the day of birth. The day of death is just, in other words, it's obvious, folks. Death is better than birth. No, it's not. It's not better. It's not in the bulletin this morning, but this past week, Noah, some of you know Noah, he teaches one of the Sunday school classes, Noah and his wife Xiaoyen, they had their baby, a boy. And it's good news. I didn't find out early enough. The bulletins were already printed. Couldn't put the details. They'll be in there in a couple of weeks. So we're sitting here experiencing birth. And there are many of us, particularly the Shea family, who are experiencing death. Which is better? Well, according to Kohelet, death's better than birth. No, it's not. But it has a better effect. He goes on to say, it's better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting. I disagree. I would rather go to a house of feasting than a house of mourning. When I see the restaurant, House of Prime Rib, I get excited. Heart skips a beat. I loosen the belt. You know what I'm saying? One circle. Because it's the House of Prime Rib. When I go to the House of the Chimes of Mourning or something like that, I'm not eager to go there. When I go to Los Angeles, I visit the burial site of my parents. They're buried at a place in Whittier called Rose Hills Memorial Park. My mother liked roses. She was buried there first. My father bought 2 spots. He was buried there. I go there. I don't look forward to it. Dare I say, I don't even enjoy it. I do it because going there, you know, they're on a hill. I look out the smog, Los Angeles basin. Start thinking about them, thinking about myself, thinking about my kids running around on the cemetery plot. Don't step on the headstones, okay, please. Don't step on, those are people. I don't enjoy it. How could he possibly say that it is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to the house of prime rib? And yet he says that. He says death is the destiny of everyone, so the living should take this to heart. Frustration is better than laughter because a sad face is good for the heart. We talked about frustration last week, how wealth exacerbates frustration in the world. Frustrating. I'm so irritated and frustrated. I didn't mention this last week, but you probably saw it coming. Golf is frustrating. You know you can do it, and yet you don't. It's irritating and frustrating and maddening, and I want more. He says frustration is better than laughter because a sad face is good for the heart. Verse 4, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. The heart of the wise, those who are wise, they're thinking and meditating and being changed and shaped by death. The heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. And then he says in verses 5 and 6, this is kind of the end of the section, he says, it is better to heed the rebuke of a wise person. He's saying to you all, it's better for you to listen to him than to ignore him and listen to fools. Fools, their voices are like the crackling of thorns under the pot. If you can imagine a campfire, the thorns, they just make noise, but there's no effect. There's no heat. It's the laughter of fools. This too is meaningless. How is it that death is better than life? This is such a macabre sermon. I'm going to suggest to you that the key here is in verses 2 and 4, and then in verses 3. Look here. I'm sorry, 2 and 3. Actually, I'm up 2 and 4. All right, here we go. There is this expression here that he uses as what we would call an inclusio, a bookend, bookmarkers. He says, it is better in verse 2 to go to a house of mourning. And then in verse 4, the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. Whenever you see, particularly in Hebrew literature, this sort of this poetic language, when they use these phrases, the exact same phrases, the exact same wording, 2 times, that's kind of a clue. It's a hint. It's a hint that you need to pay attention and you need to hone in on what this section is saying. House of mourning, that's kind of the theme. And then right sort of around the middle is this expression here, At the end of verse 2, for death is the destiny of everyone, the living should take this to heart. He's talking to us. He's talking to those of us who would subject ourselves to Qohelet's teaching. And he says, you need to pay attention. You can't ignore it, particularly people who are far from death, particularly young people. You see what happens when you're young? You don't think about that, because the day of your passing is so far into the future. I can see it. I can see my own. I've always said this, and this is my opinion about death. Okay, I'm not afraid of death, because, as the song says, I know who holds tomorrow, and I know who holds my hand. Okay, I'm not afraid of death. I'm afraid of dying. Because, you know what I'm saying? How am I gonna die? Is it gonna be awful? How about my grandma? She was sleeping and had an aneurysm and died. How awesome is that? Really? And then so we say, oh, wow, because she was so faithful, God gave her like that. So, okay, there's motivation to be faithful. Okay, folks? There's your motivation. Faithfulness to God leads to an easy transition. I'm not afraid of death. I'm afraid of dying. What's it going to look like? You see, Qohelet tells me death is the destiny of everyone. It is, in fact, coming. The living should take this to heart. I'm going to suggest a couple of things about death that I think is in Qohelet's mind. Okay, keep in mind here, we're sort of guessing to a large degree. I would suggest, though, that as we've been tracking with the mind of Qohelet, we are now six chapters into his book. We know how he thinks, okay? This is how, you know, when you say you read the Bible and you know God, how do you know God from the Bible? Is it fair to say that as we've been reading the book of Ecclesiastes, we know Qohelet? Is that fair to say? We kind of know the way he thinks, the way he talks, the way his attitude toward things. We can kind of guess, hey, Qohelet, what do you think about this fancy car? Oh, meaningless, meaningless. All is meaningless. The car drives fast and it drives you straight to death. Okay? That's what he would say, okay? He would say something. We know him. It's almost like he's our friend now, okay? Grandpa Qohelet, we know. Six chapters in, he starts to say, oh, death is so good. Death is great. You should be in the house of death than in the house of... What? See, he knows that when you come to appreciate death, your perspective about the world changes. Because the world is full of things that are very, we would use the word fleeting. They're temporary. And when you sort of appreciate the fact that, wow, our life here is so short, and then we move on to eternity, forever, maybe then you start to invest yourself not in the temporary things, but in the eternal things. You start to appreciate more things that last rather than things that fade. Appreciating death changes the way you see the world. People who are close to dying, and again, I don't mean to talk about this in a joking, flippant way, because there are people, even right now, who are experiencing this kind of situation. When you're close to dying, that little fight you had with your brother, does it matter? Does it matter anymore? I don't, he may listen to this. My brother and I, we don't argue. We're different. And growing up, we had some bad experiences. And I think to myself, you know what? If I'm about to die, I want him there. I want him. He may not be there, but I want him there. I'd love to see him. Love to hold his hand. Love to tell him, I love you, Tim. Tim, I love you. You're my brother. Because when you're about to die, relationships take on a whole new type of flavor in your mouth. You know what I'm saying? All of a sudden, the pettiness that seems to drive wedges between people, they go away. They go away. You overlook them. Yeah, you said this to me 17 years ago, and I was really offended by it for 17 years, but you know what? Let's move on. Good. When you're about to die, what becomes really of value are the things that money can't buy. We know that. We're spiritual people. We know that. And yet, we find ourselves, if we're not reminded about that, we sometimes forget that the things that are of the most value are things that money can't buy. You remember that, though, when you're about to die. When you start to live your life with death as a perspective, death as a lens through which you see life, all of a sudden things like rest and peace and harmony, these are important things. Oh, life is too short to be fighting. Fighting with your spouse, fighting with your wife, fighting with your husband, fighting with your children, fighting with your brother or your sister, fighting with your best friend. When you start to sort of think about death coming down to your doorstep, peace is better than fighting. Okay, that's my wisdom. Peace is better than arguing. Just as a good name is better than fine perfume. You like that? The book of Proverbs by Edward Chang, chapter 1, verse 1. Right there. Harmony is better than strife, just like house of prime rib is better than the cemetery. That's my wisdom. All of a sudden, when death is the lens through which you see the world, these other things, they're just less important. They're less important. I would also say we're not quite there yet because we're just about halfway through the book of Ecclesiastes. But I want to show you where we're headed, okay? Ecclesiastes chapter 12, the very last chapter, he brings his book, his essay to a close, and with these words, remember your creator in the days of your youth. That word remember is the word zakar. Zakar. I have a child named Zachary. And that word, Zachary, that word, that name, it means the Lord remembers. The Lord remembering is more than just that he thinks about us. Like I remember my shopping list. Or do you remember your phone number growing up? Yeah, that's my home Wi-Fi. The key is my home number growing up. I remember it. That's not what he means by remember. Remember is to consider deeply, is to value. And I would even say when God says that he remembers us, that has the idea of treasure. God treasures us. Treasure your creator in the days of your youth. After all that he has said, after 11 chapters that the world is meaningless, Kohelet tells his readers, you know what's really important? What's really important is for you to treasure the Lord. You knew this was coming. You knew that was the punchline. You knew that. It took us, you know, when are we going to get to chapter 12? It'll be like maybe June of 2019. We go pretty slow here, okay? Right around June of 2019, the message will be, remember spiritual things, right? The world is meaningless. Spiritual things are better. And you're going to say, oh, I didn't see that coming. Wow, what a surprise. That church would tell me God is more important than cars. Yeah, you knew that was coming. You knew that was coming. And we see Kohelet leading us to this end. And in chapter 7, when he celebrates death like he does, he says, when you live your life with the lens that death is for everybody, that the living should consider it, all of a sudden you turn your eyes away from the meaningless things of the world and you turn your eyes and you remember and treasure the Creator. Because that's more valuable. He says, oh, the house of death, the house of mourning is better than the house of feasting. Only if the house of mourning leads you to the Creator. Because there are other people who live in light of death, and so they know death is coming. We only got one life to live. YOLO. You only live once. So I'm just going to live it up. I'm going to try all different things. I'm going to try all the wonderful things the world has to offer. And Kohelet would look at this young person, this young man or young woman, and just shake his head, stroke his beard. Foolish. Foolish, foolish. Because you'll come to the end of that journey, and you will be absolutely empty and frustrated. Kohelet says, you know what? Let's try something else. Let's try something different. Death is in view. Death is for everybody. Let's turn our attention to the things that don't die. Let's turn our attention to the things that are eternal, that have lasting value. Turns out that Kohelet and a buddy that we know in the New Testament, Paul, they think very, very similarly. You look here in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, one of my favorite passages. Paul says to the Corinthians who are suffering, who are sort of experiencing suffering, he says, we don't lose heart, folks. Even though outwardly in our bodies we're wasting away, yet inwardly in our spirits we're being renewed day by day. The light, not heavy, light, very light, and momentary, very short troubles that we experience now, they're achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. I have a feeling that Paul read Ecclesiastes. I have a feeling that Paul loved Ecclesiastes. I have a feeling that Paul was influenced by Ecclesiastes. As should we. To focus on the things that are unseen and eternal. Not temporary, not light. Paul says that the outer man is decaying. The outer man, the outer body, it's decaying every day. Every day you are approaching your end. We know that. We lament it, but we accept it. Instead of focusing on death, we think about and meditate on the things that are beyond death. This is what Kohelet is telling us this morning, and I don't think it's a surprise to any of us. That as spiritual people, you are called to think spiritually. Then he says in verses 5 and 6, he says, folks, to his audience, it's better to heed the rebuke of a wise person than to listen to the song of fools. There are going to be people, even today, even right now, you're going to hear this message about death and you're going to say to yourself, I'm so far from death. I have so many more things I want to achieve before death. I need to spend my time and energy doing those things. Please don't take this as Pastor Eddie said for me to drop out of school, for me to stop trying, stop exercising, even. That's my issue, okay? I want to live a long life. I do. I want to see Zachary and Jacob grow up. I want to see them get married. They're sons, so I don't walk any of them down the aisle. Maybe they would ask me to officiate. They better ask me to officiate. I'd be very upset. I'm not even kidding. Boys, there's no option here, okay? I want to see that. I want to hold my grandchildren. I want to grow old with Cindy. I want to do all those things. But I also know, folks, My parents died young. So every so often I'll joke with Cindy, get ready. It's coming. I don't expect to live a long time. My parents didn't live a long time. Their parents didn't live a long time. The only person in my extended family, my uncle, my father's brother, lived till he was 95 because he was a farmer. I don't even remember the last time I touched dirt, okay? He was a farmer, built like a horse. That's it. Everybody else, young. I know it's coming. And I would also say, many of you know my own personal history, my own personal background. If my mom doesn't die young, I've thought to myself, would I even be here? I'm not sure if I would. It was a pretty pivotal moment for me. If my dad doesn't die, am I here? I'm not sure if I would. If I am, I'm not sure. It's because those experiences, like it or not, shaped me. And they continue to shape me. And they continue to affect the way that I see people. I see relationships. I see church. I think about my mother-in-law. Cindy's mom. I've told Cindy this, and I'm not saying, she's not here, is she? I'm not saying this to gain points from her. She knows that's not the point. But I said to Cindy many times, when you say the word, let's bring mom in. Let's bring mom to our house. This is my mother-in-law, folks. And those of you who have mother-in-laws know that that's, you know. Need I say more? I mean, this is our responsibility. This is our responsibility. Because death is coming. And it starts to make you see what's most important. So this passage actually with Kohelet saying all these crazy, crazy things about death, it's actually not surprising that he's saying that death is better than birth. Kohelet doesn't really think that, folks, okay? Just a little secret. He doesn't really think that, but it has a better effect. It has a better effect. It has a more lasting and redirecting, recalibrating effect. Death recalibrates us more than birth. Death recalibrates our value system more than joy. Mourning recalibrates our view of what's worth our time and energy and money more than feasting. It does. And so when we've been tracking with Kohelet, we are not surprised that he would have this kind of view. And I would suggest to you today, let's consider death. It's awful, but it actually does make us better people. More spiritual people. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we come before you this morning. And we recognize that you have created us. And in the state that we are in now, in sin-cursed bodies, for those of us who have put our faith in Jesus, our spirit is made new, is resurrected, is living forever. But our bodies are not. They're not made new. They're decaying. They're dying. And we will one day all pass on if Jesus doesn't come back in that time. Lord, I pray that you would help us not to be ignorant about that. Particularly those of us who are young and who feel far away from that moment. Help us to consider that death comes for all of us. And that as the living, as those of us who are living, we need to pay attention. So that death can recalibrate our value system. So that we can put more energy in the things that last and maybe even less in the things that are temporal. So that we might value more importantly peace and rest and harmony and relationships, spiritual things, and even the most important, to remember God our Creator in the days of our youth. Would you cause that to happen in our hearts as we consider death today? In Jesus' name, amen.
Please stand and join us as we continue to turn our eyes on